So this is the New Glarus Brewing Podcast with Dan Carey. I am Scott May. This week I am sitting across the table here from Ben Geistard. How you doing, Ben?
I'm doing well. How are you, Scott?
I'm doing really, really well, and I'm very excited to have this conversation because your position in the brewery is one of the most fascinating things to me, and I think it's sort of, it's illustrative of a couple of things, like, and one being just how, like, kind of serious the brewery takes end user quality. And also just like inventing a position like you hold in a brewery seems very unique to me. So I'm very excited to talk to you. What is your job here at the brewery?
So it's nice because I got hired on as part of the sales team, mm-hmm. but able to also be the draft technician. So
gotcha.
Yeah, I kind of started in the business. Actually, my wife helped me get started in the business as a line cleaner. I had been working for a soda company for almost 10 years, and the last three of it, I started, she helped me get a draft line cleaning business started.
Oh, but, very cool.
I was not good at first. Actually, my first account cleaning, I was there for over 2 hours.
Really?
I didn't get one draft line cleaned, and I did not get that job.
That did not work out well.
No, but I learned pretty quick, and one of the really cool things was one of the first people to actually catch wind of what I was doing was a former sales rep from New Glarus.
Oh, cool.
They found me in the market while I was cleaning draft beer lines, and the manager at the time reached out and was like, hey, we want to meet with you. So once I actually met the rep from New Glarus,
yeah.
My mind was blown. I didn't realize how poorly I was cleaning draft lines and how much I needed to learn.
That's hilarious.
I think I asked way too many questions, and eventually they're like, why don't you just come work for us? And I think we got a spot for you.
That's really cool. And to be clear, like, you're not taking care of, you probably are taking care of the draft lines here at New Glarus. No.
So the whole idea of kind of what the brewery wants to do with this education side of it is we want professionals in the industry. So even though I could come down to the brewery and clean the beer lines, we want a professional to come in, one that we know does it according to the Brewers Association, the guidelines that are outlaid in that book. And that's kind of what we want to promote when we go to the market as well. I'm here to help,
but
that's the big thing. We kind of got this position going. It actually all started with Dan Carey.
Yeah.
Him and Deb were out to dinner with some friends, former fellow brewers from Germany, but they were in town. Mm-hmm. And I think it was one of our beers we have out currently, Back 40 Bach, as I remember. And their colleagues got to try the beer before Dan did. So Dan tries the beer afterwards because he had asked, you know, how's the beer? He's like, proud of it, obviously.
Oh, yeah.
So he tries it and he almost wanted to spit it out.
He's just like, oh, no.
Yeah.
Something is terribly not right here.
Lines ended up being full of, you know, buildup. You know, lactobacillus is a big one we don't obviously want in the brewery.
Yeah.
It creates a lot of buttery flavors, off notes. And he looked at the manager at the time, Jeff Schaefer, which was a huge draft guy for the company starting out, and who got me into it. And he's like, Jeff, we got to get this figured out.
What can we do?
Yeah, what can we do? Can we get somebody hired on to do the education on it and go from there? So
that is really cool. And I think, you know, draft line, like the art of draft maintenance, I don't think it's like top of many beer drinkers' minds, but it blows my mind how crucial it can be. And we were talking a little bit before this. It's like when you see the blooper of the dude running for the touchdown, he gets all excited and he's celebrating and he's got his hands up. He drops the ball and then it's whistled dead. And it's like, oh yeah. And it's like, you did everything so right. And then there was that last step and it just all was for naught, for something that was ultimately out of your own control. And I can see how that would be so frustrating to a guy like Dan, but I also think, you know, for a lot of folks, like I said before, it's not like the top of everyone's mind either. So it's like the part of serving beer that I don't think many people think about. And it's like, but once you realize what can build up in those lines, you know, as a consumer, you'd almost want to know, like, when was the last time your draft lines were clean when you're ordering a beer? Like, I think about this stuff now, which is insane to me. Like, since you started sort of down this path, how do you think about when you're like, or what is going through your head when you're going out and ordering beers? And what are some of like the signs of if you've gotten a beer and maybe, you know, the draft line wasn't 100% the way it should be.
Yeah, I mean, I think you taste a lot of beer with your nose, the smell of what's coming across. And I've been in a couple bars where, you know, trying to help out a line cleaner or an account, and you can smell the faucets from across the bar.
Yeah.
And, you know, so smell is a huge indicator. If the beer doesn't look right, you know, you got stuff floating in the beer, and that happens probably, you know, from time to time at least. And starting out in this, you know, one of the big indicators was like, okay, we've got a email from a brewer or a distributor, and they're like, we've got a bad barrel of Spotted Cow, or we've got a bad barrel of New Glarus.
Yeah. Well, and then that becomes very serious if it's on our side of the fence.
Exactly.
Because if it's on our side of the street, then there's something wrong somewhere in the process.
Exactly. But that's the first thing they go to.
Yeah.
So, you know, I've been here long enough. I know that Dan does two extra steps in the, you know, micro testing than any other brewery in the world. Two steps deeper in the cleaning of kegs than any other brewery in the world. We take apart and do all of our own maintenance on kegs. You know, there's a really neat system involved with the top of the kegs that'll tell you how long the rubber's been in the gasket.
Oh, wow.
Or the gasket's been in the keg down tube. So we can replace that when it's needed or before it becomes an issue. So
yeah,
we're very, very proactive here. So probably the first 5 years I was at the brewery, all I did was go out and attack those type of accounts. And the difference we made, you know, early on was huge.
It has to be. And this just occurred to me, and it might not have any effect whatsoever, but when you talk about buildup in lines and things like that, historically beer, outside of a few styles, didn't have much stuff floating in it, right? Like your beer was filtered and clear. Like for, you know, think about from the 60s all the way up to like the mid 90s, right? It's like, is it yellow? Is it clear? You know, does it have a fuzzy top? Then that's a beer, right? But now we have beers that have all sorts of things in them, like purposely have hazy stuff in them. Does that present challenges in draft lines?
I honestly feel like it's not as big a deal as people think it is.
I think it would be.
Yeah, because typically with light beers, I tend to get more buildup around the couplers, around the faucets than I do your heavier beers.
Really?
Or your unfiltered style beers. And I think the reason of that is it's more open. It's like are totally naked. There's nothing to hide behind it. There's key ingredients in there. And once those touch oxygen, it starts to grow.
Yeah.
You know, things like that. So, it can be fixed with regular line cleaning. Actually, that's the great thing about it. You go to the brewery here and we've had lines installed in our draft system for, since I've been here. So 14 plus years.
Yeah.
We've never had a buildup in our lines. We've never poured a beer or served a beer that was an off flavor or had stuff floating in the beer itself. It doesn't have to happen
because if you stay, because there's no reason why a line can't last, you know, forever. If you're just staying pretty much on top of cleaning it, now wear and tear notwithstanding, couplers break, you know, rubber wears out, these things happen. You have to replace, you know, mechanical things. But as far as like having a smooth and operating draft system, it would seem like if you do keep on top of it, everyone's beer is going to taste so much better. This seems like it should be like almost priority number one for so many breweries to just be like, I want you to buy my beer. Can I please see your draft system?
Yes.
You know, so do you find, you know, because when you're going out with the sales team and you're part of the sales team, so you're talking to a lot of tavern and restaurant owners, are other brewers sending people out in this capacity? Or is this something that sort of Deb and Dan have taken on as sort of, because Dan takes on these crusades that I think are just so amazing, whether it's like,
sure,
I'm going to bring back this esoteric form of barley that I think is going to do well in warmer climates so that the American beer industry doesn't, you know, so I can make beer continuing into the future, to like, I'm going to make sure every tap line in Wisconsin is clean. He seems to take on these things. I guess I'm just a long-winded way of saying, is this on the top of anyone else's head, I guess?
I don't think so. And the neat thing about our street team is when we're out in the market and we're going in, we're not just trying to sell you beer.
Yeah.
Granted, we have a great product. You know, people come from long distances to drink it. You know, we're only in Wisconsin. So you have to be a Wisconsin bar, restaurant, off-premise account in order to get our beer, and people got to come and patron those accounts. But yeah, as far as somebody else out there, no, I think we've got something unique where we're in there to do a sales call, but oh, we just noticed you're pouring foamy beer.
Yeah.
Well, what's going on? Well, I don't know. Well, we just had four sales reps go into the cooler, and we walk in there, and all of a sudden you can see that the forced air system is not hooked up to anything. You just had four people in there that went, shook their kegs, checked inventory.
Yeah.
But nobody looked at the obvious.
Yeah. No one looked at, is something wrong with the, is there a systemic thing that's just off?
Dan and Deb, I think, kind of put this into your mindset when you're in an account. Heck, even when we're on vacation, you go to a gas station, you know. My wife already knows the first thing I'm going to do is go to the cooler, just make sure all the Nuglaris is set.
Just front facing
and make sure the dates are rotated properly.
What's really funny, you walk into a grocery store with Dan or Deb or Kate, and it's hilarious. They walk by the beer section and it's just pulling out. It got me doing it too. Like, it took me like 6 months of knowing these people. And it's like, oh yeah, we're pulling this forward. We're making sure the pyramid looks right. And then, you know, kind of always in my gear, people say, do you work here? It's like, No, I'm legitimately not supposed to be doing this right now, I don't think.
Yeah, quality is so top of mind with this brewery, and it's neat to be able to do both the sales and the draft side, and then work with all of our street team to make sure that as much of Wisconsin is taken care of as possible. I mean, they're constantly giving me, you know, hey, this line cleaner is new to the market, or our distributors too. Hey, this line cleaner came around, we want to try to get some extra training. You know, we just finished up a Micromatic draft class that the brewery sponsored. We sent, I think, 10 this time, 12 the last time, 2 months ago. And we're just educating on all things draft.
And what was that word? B, what does it mean? And then what is like sort of encompassed in that class?
Yeah. So, I mean, for us, it's like you say, if you have a line cleaner that, you know, you go out and you do the training with them, and a lot of them are leery. They're like, why do you want to know my business? Why do you want to help me?
That's a weird testament. It's just where we are, I guess, of people, I guess, where it's like, yeah. Hey, I'm legitimately want to help you. And I felt it in my bones to be like, why though?
Yeah.
You know, what
people think that I want to take their business or get a new line cleaner in there. But the whole concept of it is, if I can train one line cleaner and he takes care of 100 accounts,
well,
that's 100 accounts I don't have to worry about draft cleanliness, because hey, I was able to take you out to lunch, I was able to show you some tips and tricks, maybe I learned something from you. But what we got accomplished is, we know how to mix chemical properly, we know how to recirculate properly, we know how to keep the beer lines clean every 2 weeks. And for accounts, I mean, I can't stress this enough. For an account to clean their beer lines every 2 weeks is a money maker. It is not a cost. It is a money maker.
Well, yeah, because you would, you know, you might, like, as an end you, I'm like the ultimate end use consumer here, because it's like, I don't really know about a lot of this stuff. So it's like, all I know is there are bars that I liked to go to and bars I didn't like to go to, or at least like didn't think like, oh, this is a great beer I'm having right now. But when you went to a bar like that you knew was beer centric, that you knew sort of took it seriously, it was weird to me, without really even knowing it, how much different the same beer could taste at two different establishments.
Yeah.
And how much, and then coming to know just a little bit about like the brewing process and like how this place works, how much like the end consumer, we're so trained to be like, oh, there's a problem with this product, I'm calling the manufacturer. You know what I mean? Because obviously, you know, in our minds, it's like Apple makes a phone, I buy the phone. If something breaks on the phone, I call Apple, right? But with beer, it's like Nuglaris makes a beer. Then they give it to seven different people. And then you get to drink the beer. But we get to hear about every sort of mistake along the line, right? So it seems so almost backwards intuitive that you would start a program to fix an issue you have no control over, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, when focusing on draft quality, you've got a product. We put it out there exactly how we want it to be perceived by the end user, and it goes into a system where yeah, maybe it's a dirt floor cooler.
It's a Rube Goldberg machine of distribution and everything else to get the beer out into one state, you know?
Yeah. So, and let me tell you, I mean, customers or accounts, I should say, have come just a long way.
Yeah.
You know, a lot more has, on the educational side, has been out there. You know, now we have the internet. We can look things up on the phone, right at your fingertips.
Like YouTube University is like, it is like great for this sort of like kind of weirdo esoteric stuff where it's like, you just get into like a subject. Like, how would I clean it? Like if I were to open a tavern and a couple of weeks later, I'm like, oh, my beer tastes weird. I guess I have to figure out how to clean my draft line. I'd be like on YouTube, like how to clean a draft line.
Yes. Yeah. You know, I started my business in 2007 and it went till I got hired on here in 2010. Well, the Brewers Association put out their guideline book. The first edition came out in 2009.
Wow.
So before 2009, no one had a one-stop shop source for all things draft. Like,
this is how you do it.
This is how you do it. We're on our fourth edition now with the BA. And, you know, when I first learned in 2007, I learned from a guy who had been doing it for 30 years.
Yeah.
You know, he's just been doing it forever.
It was just had all this knowledge in his head. It's just like, no one ever bothered to be like, put it somewhere.
Well, and what he was doing in the market was what the last guy taught him.
Yeah.
So it was interesting because, like I said, when I started, I was not a good line cleaner because of basically who I learned from.
And
I loved the guy I learned from. And we were, you know, my parents and him were good friends. But I eventually had to go back and train him how to clean beer lines because it was just, there was so much more in the development side of what beer is, what it takes to keep clean, how to mix chemicals. I mean, a lot of these guys, when we first started, were mixing, you know, such a low percentage of chemical that it was like you were just running water.
You're just rinsing it out.
Exactly.
If there's anything microscopic, you're not killing it off. If there's
the first time we were out together, when he was showing me how to do it, I saw like this big floater come out of the beer line into a glass.
Is that the terminology?
It is the terminology. It is the terminology. It's
succinct. I like a good succinct word for something. It's like, what just came out of my beer line? That, sir, is a floater and it is not great.
And it is just, it's floating in the beer. It doesn't look appealing and it's not necessarily going to hurt you, but it just ruins everything about the beer.
So, well, yeah, I mean, you eat with your eye, like you eat with your drink with your eyes, your nose, your whatever. And it, you know, it would take I'm trying to think of the circumstance where someone like slides the beer over to me and it's got a little floaty in it. And I'm still like, no, I'm into this. This is great. Like, it'd have to be like the last beer on the face of the earth to be like, all right, well, okay, this looks good to me.
As somebody learning, I'm like, what was that? And he's like, wow, I'm going to probably get called back to clean these lines again. But he turns up the pressure on his pump and just tons more stuff came out. And it was like, okay, I know I'm learning here, but obviously something's got to be better. And for me, I'm a guy that just likes to tear things apart, put them back together, learn how it works. And the brewery became my best avenue for learning exactly how to do this. And hopefully we can be that educational tool for the next line cleaner out there.
Yeah. And I mean, like I said before, it just seems like such a cool, like a cool service that the brewery just sort of provides in this educational space to restaurant and tavern owners. Because it's like, I remember when I was like my second cooking job. I always held like jobs for like 5 years at a time when I was a cook. So it was like my second cooking job. And it was the first time I had like a semi-open kitchen and it was like right by, you know, the soda machine.
Yeah.
And I remember I was there the first time like the soda line cleaner came. And just like you were saying, when they're blowing out those lines, it's like, and I'd been working in restaurants for like 5-6 years at that point, but I had never seen what can accumulate in a line. And when you think about it, it makes sense. It's like you are putting sugar water through this.
Right.
And then you're letting some of it sit. And, you know, and it's one of those things like the hot dog factory where it's like, oh shoot, I don't know if I wanted to know this, but then when you do, you're like, oh man, this seems like the kind of thing I want to know my bars and restaurants are like on top of.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, these are some of the negative things of it can happen. But the great thing is, you know, the educational side of it is really getting out there. But again, you know, if you want help, if you're looking for help, you know, we're a phone call away.
Well, that's the other thing. Like, what, you know, when you go to a bar, what else can go wrong in sort of a draft line? Because I know there's things that can be off about, you know, pressure, creating too much foam, too little foam, beer coming out flat. You know, when you get that, like, you know, some people like, I probably will like it, but when you get that beer that's just like dead flat, but like filled to the filled to the very top, what are some of the things that causes stuff like that?
We actually just had two of them, a couple of our top accounts that just happened to have a couple mistakes made within the draft system. So they had three different banks of four beers on this. Well, the one we were on happened to have an issue.
Yeah.
So of course, hey, we got bad barrels of spotted cow. We can't get it to pour. It's always foamy. Okay, well, let's go check it out.
Yeah, let's go take a look.
So we got to go take a look. Well, they had beer pumps in there. So the way a beer pump works in a system is you apply the pressure to the beer pump will help get the beer to the faucet. So
yeah.
Then you can just carbonate the beer to what that needs. Well, what ended up happening was they switched the regulators.
Okay.
So we were putting almost twice as much pressure on the keg itself that it needed and less on the pump, and everything was overcarbonated. So of course everything's going to break out into foam.
Yeah.
You know, everything's going to have subsequent issues from those things. So we were able to correct it, and by the time we left, they're pouring perfect beer. So again, not an issue on our end.
Yeah.
But something that could be fixed just didn't get noticed.
Well, that's one of the funny things too. Cause like going back to my time in a restaurant, I do, you know, when you're slammed and the place is just going right. And it's like, this keg blew, go change this. You know, I remember you just like running down the stairs to the basement. Like you're moving quick. You're just you're basically ripping, you know, whipping the top off, throwing the empty away, and then like moving things really, really fast. It's not surprising to me that things get missed, that things happen in that environment, you know? So how, if you are like a restaurant owner, how do you sort of self-diagnose some of these things?
Yeah. Taking the time. Yeah. Getting yourself a little bit educated in the business that you have of selling draft beer. You know, we've gotten phone calls where, oh, I've got nothing coming out of the tap. But again, somebody ran downstairs, switched a keg real quick, but didn't realize they grabbed the wrong coupler and put it on an empty keg or didn't actually switch the right barrel. I mean, the Brewers Association has a manual. You can go online. You can download it for free. You can order the magazine in physical form. And it's just got a lot of different things laid out for you. Troubleshooting. There's a whole section on troubleshooting. So, you know, you have options to at least try to diagnose a little bit. My best advice would just don't go changing anything. Don't go messing with the regulators or the pressure or whatever. Just if you need to, our distributors have great draft techs.
Yeah.
You know, we're always available, obviously, but it starts with the distributor. They're our first line.
If there's a dial, you are unsure of what it does. Don't go turning it.
No, I think a lot of people think a lot of, you know, bar owners and stuff will be like, okay, my beer is foaming, I'm going to turn it down.
Oh no, that would be me. I would be that guy. I would be the guy going like, I don't know why it's all messed up. I turned every knob. I flipped every switch. I kicked it twice. And it's like, you did everything wrong. You, like, if you took a lesson on how to mess this up, you would have aced the test. Like, but that would, I sympathize because like you're in the middle of wanting to get it right.
Yes.
But at the same time, if you haven't, you know, sort like, it is a complex system. You are moving pressurized liquid through a small tube into a tap. And then it's supposed to pour perfectly the same way every single time. I don't think it would be like, you know, too shameful to like, just be like, I have no clue how this works. I need someone to teach me or just do this because this seems like magic.
I think, you know, working for a soda company previous to this, you know, the lines for the most part were all the same size. You just hooked up A to B and then
that was it.
You pump in your soda.
Oh yeah. It goes bag, water, boom.
Beer is a totally different scenario. You're going from, a larger line to a smaller line to a smaller line, trying to create resistance so that by the time it leaves the barrel and gets to the faucet, it's at a pourable, I guess, pressure.
Yeah.
You know, and that way the CO2 stays locked in the beer and comes out when you're about to consume it. So there's a whole science to it. And I've even seen too many times where people come in and they're like, well, I don't really know the science behind a draft system, but I'll just kind of duplicate what I see. And yeah, you should be fine. And it never works out.
No, no. And then another question I had, and I might be misremembering something, but and maybe I am wrong here, but different beers behave differently on draft lines, right?
Correct.
So like
correct.
Dancing Man Wheat, for example, needs mm-hmm. something different than just like, okay, I've set a standard draft lineup. I can just throw the keg of Dancing Man on. So there is variables in different sort of styles. How and why does that work out that way?
Like they call it volumes of CO2, and it's basically how much CO2 is needed in that beer to keep it carbonated.
Mm-hmm.
And it becomes a finicky process. But like our Spotted Cow can be carbonated to this many volumes, where
yeah.
Dancing Man, being a Hefeweizen or a wheat beer, could be much, much higher.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think we've been able to dial it down a little bit, so it's able to pour much better on draft now, but it's still higher than, say, your typical lager or, you know, ale. So the nice thing about having a draft system with multiple regulators is you can make those adjustments. You can add pressure to different kegs where those kegs are needed. And, you know, basically it's a big thing of soda. You know, you crack the top and all of a sudden the CO2 comes out. But if you put the cap back on and wait a while, when you open again, it makes the same sound. Why does it do that? You didn't do it. You didn't add anything to it.
Yeah.
You didn't change anything. Well, the CO2 left the soda and it filled the headspace. So what we're doing in a draft system is we're applying CO2 to the top of the barrel to keep that from happening. So
gotcha.
Now your beer stays the same all the way through. And if you screw that up, you're going to end up with flat, foamy beer at the end. And half the time, beer left in the keg that you can't even sell.
Just because you can't get, is it because you wouldn't even be able to get the pressure up to kind of even get it out of there?
Right.
Unless it becomes
so flat that it's unpourable. So now you're just sitting with wasted money sitting in the bottom of a keg where if you were to carbonate it properly, you'd get all of it out.
Well, the thing I think, you know, the thing that I think has been just dawning on me recently when it comes to like service industry, food industry, beverage industry, there really can, you know, there is no turnkey bar. There is no turnkey restaurant. There is no turnkey brewery. These are things that sort of require a mindset when you go into that business of like, yeah, so I'm about to make this my life for the next 20 to 30, I guess. Like, you got to kind of have a passion for making those kind of businesses run, because if you don't, it's little things that will start piling up. Then all of a sudden you're like, why did I have so much heat on my spot in my first year? And then it slowly dwindles until, you know, you're sitting there 10 years later in your restaurant going, well, why isn't anyone coming anymore? And it's like, well, because there were so many little things that piled up. And it's so unfortunate, especially with beer, because it doesn't have to.
Yeah. I think maintenance is a big word.
Yeah.
You know, and then the part of it is maybe, constantly trying to reinvent yourself, but staying how you started.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of times I feel like people are coming to Wisconsin and our beers on tap are a huge pull.
It's a thing. It's like a real thing.
You know, we've never been to the area where, say, Line and Kugel's was back in the day, where you'd walk into a bar and there were eight different Line and Kugel tap lines, you know, on tap or handles on tap. And it's like, we can get the 2, 3, and 4, you know, at a lot of our top accounts. But it's like, the more accounts we have like that, people are coming in for those beers and they rotate. They're not sitting.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's like you lose some of those lines for other, you know, what's new and flashy. But if they don't hold up to the same quality or the same standard that we're trying to put out at the brewery, you know, you could lose some people that way too.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So I know you also, you have a territory, right? On the street team side of things.
Yeah.
Where is your territory?
So I've covered, I mean, a lot of, the sales team has covered the majority of the state. Yeah. I definitely help out the majority of the state with line cleaning and draft quality. So we've been to all of our distributors. We hold mini draft classes for the sales team, just so when they're in the market, they become the draft, you know, the answer, the one that the account goes
just
to.
Creating the just mini draft texts to go out.
Well, you want those to be the industry leaders in their market. So
yeah.
I really enjoy doing that. Currently I have the Lee Beverage territory, both out of the office in Oshkosh and one out of the office in Rothschild. So
gotcha.
I'm in their backyard quite a bit.
In the good old Fox Valley.
Yep.
I love the Fox Valley. Like there's just this chain of like, it's funny. It's like it goes from like small city to a little bit bigger small city to like medium city. It's like this, and then to Green Bay. It's like this gradually growing from like Nina through Oshkosh through Appleton, then all the way up to Green Bay. It's like some of us are done. We're gonna stop moving here, but the majority of us are going to the lake.
Yeah, and you got all these little communities all over the place that have some really great things to offer as well. It's a lot of fun being able to travel throughout the area.
Oh yeah, they got minor league baseball up there. Mm-hmm. Tons of cool bars. There's a great downtown scene in Appleton.
Supper clubs galore.
Oh, it's really weird because when you think about Wisconsin, they're thinking about up north, Madison, Milwaukee. You know, these sort of like Door County, these sort of touchdowns. But like in the middle of the state, there's this swath of like really cool little cities like La Crosse and Appleton and Oshkosh, where it's just like, you know, you can have a really good time where some of these UW affiliate campuses are, you know?
Well, I got to say, my first spotted cow was actually given to me by my father-in-law, in a supper club.
There you go.
It was like, I had heard of the brewery, and got my first taste of Spotted Cow in a supper club. And little did I know coming to the brewery that this is something that was as big as it was.
Yeah, that part of it is kind of, it's still kind of insane to me to think about when you just like how many different places you see the brewery just represented when you're just out in the world here in Wisconsin. How prolific it is really cool to me.
Yeah.
It's
neat to be a part of.
Yeah. Cause it's like, you just stop in and get gas. You're like, oh, there's our sign. You know, you're kind of always connected to home a little bit.
Yeah.
No matter where you go in Wisconsin, it's pretty, pretty cool.
That's for sure.
So what are you trying to drink? Like get in your glass these days? It could be anything too.
Yeah. I've being my first New Glarus experience, Spotted Cow just hit the spot. So that's usually my go-to. My wife is a huge Moon Man fan. And for a guy that does not typically like hoppy beers, she's got me hooked on that now too. Especially when you start pairing that with anything, you know, pepper jack curds or, you know, any kind of cheese from Wisconsin to get that peppery flavor in there with that. It just changes that beer. It's
Hell yeah. Hot Wings and Moon Man are legit like a slept down combo, I think. Cause people always go for like the light, like try to get like a, you know, like kind of like a light American lager with like wings and like, you know, nachos or anything with spice. But it's like, no, man, you got to confuse your palate. You got to throw in the bitter with the spicy. They both set each other off. This is great.
There's a spot. It has become my wife, Jess, and I, our favorite spot. For this specific reason, Bayside in Fish Creek up in Door County.
Oh yeah.
Has a pepper jack cheese curd. I mean, we go there and that's what we order, either one or two baskets of those and Moon Man until it's gone.
There you go. There you go.
Pairing those two is just way too good.
I had two apple ales and a serendipity. Like I decided to go I looked at my beer fridge and I've been neglecting it because, you know, you just go through ebbs and flows. And I was like, what do I even have in there? And I looked and it's just like stocked with fruit beer. And I was just like, okay, cool. So I guess we're doing apple ale. And then I had two of those while I was watching a movie and I was like, oh, what else do I have in there? Oh, a serendipity. Okay. I guess we're doing that now. And it was actually like a really cool experience. Cause I was like just sitting there watching a movie. I think I like made a plate of nachos and I was eating nachos and drinking apple ale. And I was like, this somehow works. Maybe I'm a broken person, but this is somehow working for me right now. So I feel pretty good about all of my life choices at this moment.
Well, this is the first year we're going to have, and this is probably a shame to me, but, we got as a gift this year for Christmas from the in-laws is a dedicated beer fridge.
So, nice.
Yeah.
Kate put one in our kitchen because I think she was tired of my beer just sort of taking over.
got to have some vegetables in our diet.
Yeah, the regular fridge. And I don't think she was ready yet to commit to the Wisconsin garage beer fridge, which like, I think that's the end goal of most Wisconsinites is like, I'm going to get the good job and then I'm going to, you know, hopefully put down some steaks, get a house, and then I'm going to buy a fridge for the garage and I'm going to put beer in it. I think that's like top of most Wisconsinites' priority list.
Yes.
Well, Ben, thank you very much for your time today. Is there anything else you want to leave people with as far as, draft line maintenance and just, any parting wisdom on how you can ensure you're just pouring the best beer you can out of your establishments?
Yeah, I think, for accounts out there, realizing that draft quality or that cleaning your beer lines is a money maker. We've done analysis in the past. We try sharing it with retailers as well. Sometimes it's hard to connect when you've got 10 minutes in front of somebody and you're trying to sell a beer or give them help on their draft system. But, when we broke it down, even paying a high price, I think at that time we broke it down to, it's like $10 a line or $12 a beer line to have somebody come in and clean them. And say you had 10 draft lines. Well, that's going to cost you $120.
Yeah.
So $240 a month. Well, for an average bar or at that, so you've got 10 draft lines. If you could go through 10 half barrels in a month, and that's a mix of domestic and craft.
Yeah.
If you could just go through 10 and you had somebody coming in charging you $240 a month, by year's end, line cleaning only costs you, it's less than 1% of your total profits.
Yeah.
But you're keeping people on that side of the bar. They're going to take a second one because it tastes the way they remember it. They taste the way they think it should. And you've just created this quality aspect of your business.
And I might be wrong on this, but I thought of it and it was in alliteration. So I have to say it. To me, it seems like a flat beer is not going to be a fast beer, right? No. Because there's not going to be that sparkle on your tongue. You are not going to want to keep, there's going to be no pull to keep sipping on it. Right. It'd be like drinking a glass of like still room temperature water,
And it sounds
so
like
that's a new one for me. A flat beer is not a fast beer. Fast beer does not encourage, or a slow beer does not encourage you to drink another one.
Well, I would agree with that. Good
there we go. Well, thank you, Ben. You have yourself a good one.
All right. Thank you.